2% of our guests. And I saw for a better result of teaching the record reflect that we are required to conduct business. You know, I want you to take a moment to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Before we begin, as always, I'd like to thank Diane Miller, the House Travel Ordinary Secretary of Record, and Madison Tura from the Juno LAO for staffing the committee today. Today, we will be hearing from Bill 21 by Representative Clark Bogan. She is Chief Recognition of Tribes with both invited and joint testimony. If Representative Clark and Clint Pruitt, staff to Representative Clark, you would come forward here to open the record and give us a recap of the legislation.
Same reason that we would do any software idea. self-determination power, declaration of independence as a country, says, will the truth be self-evident that all people are created equal. If they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, then inherent rights that could not be taken away even by a government that erodes our life, liberty, and our pursuit of happiness. So I'm sure this bill is just an attempt to help us to live up to that ideal that will be seen as important. Alaska's indigenous people are sellers from not being visible to them. Alaska history needs to be first and foremost. As a proud people, we still discuss concepts like sovereignty. The question of sovereignty, what exactly does that mean? We claim to, on one hand, retain tribes from excess, but on the other hand, ask them to waive their sovereignty. There's only 8 countries in the world that have a larger land mass than Alaska. It is inconceivable that our state can solve its housing, social services issues, its public safety issues, its education issues, unless we do it through collaboration and interdependence with the Alaskan people. This is a step towards acknowledging that. I know that change is hard, and I mean, it's both emotional and it's spiritual. They say change is hard work, it's also hard work, working hard. It's my belief that it's time to acknowledge our tribes as citizens and friends, and that we discuss it we have a conversation in a way that opens the door to healing, restoration, and brings Alaska, I think, into a state of wellness that we have denied ourselves by not going down this path because of fear of what that relationship might look like. So I'm not sure. Flowers have the right to just a few things that are in the bill. I packed into this with a lot of great ideas. The first 3 sections of the bill I mentioned would be a 1-page of sponsored statement, and I will just briefly touch on presenters and companies in detail. The supporting materials on the back of President Nixon's special address on Indian affairs, the 1999 Alaska Supreme Court case, and there's Attorney General, General Liminal Stark, Governor Walker, all these candidates are trying to Alaska. Our presenters have provided some terrific resources on self-determination of the Alaska Native American Indian people, including also the Special Nations Address, which I think was a seminal moment in American history when we moved from the determination era for government tribal relations to self-determination. And just a brief quote from the address of him here. I think it's powerful. The story of the Indian in America is something more than the record of white management by Wilson, broken agreements, intellectual remorse, and prolonged failure. This record is also one of survival, endurance, adaptation, and creativity in the face of overwhelming obstacles, but it's a record of enormous contributions to this country, to its art and culture, to its strength and spirit, to its sense of history, and its sense of purpose. I'm sure I just will hand this over to you guys if I can now for a few more comments, but you know, as someone who served in public safety in the state for a long time, and as someone who comes from a military family, my father was a Korean War vet, I've made a note that the Alaskan Natives have the highest demographic rate of service to this country. More than 2.5 times the other demographic group in Alaska that served. And I feel that tonight and have bargained to move to the history of this nation up to this very moment. And I just feel like I need to be honored to make a picture.
Mr. Jerry, before you begin, I want to just thank you for all the time that you've been here today. Can you join us?
Seems appropriate to introduce my title self first to capture its staff for Representative Camp. Also, thank you for hearing this bill. Just kind of continuing with the background materials we also provided to you, the Baker v. John case, Alaska Supreme Court case, which kind of normally signals the moment that Alaska courts stops the unparalleled termination of acknowledged tribes and self-determination in the state. We find that. Background information for the community for the record of this bill. And also, President Todd mentioned Attorney General in his memo that signifies when the executive branch acknowledged the legal status of the last Supreme Court defined for us in this state. And with these materials, you might ask them all yourself or ask for why do we need this bill? And honestly, that's not really a rhetorical question. It was a question I naturally had for us when we sent the bill draft over. And I think that part of the purpose for the bill is to underscore the role that this body has in the state of Alaska, which is the Supreme Court is our branch of government that tells us what the law is. And it's this branch of government that sets and declares what the policy of the state is. And we think it's important that the statutes of the state as the declared policy, that the state no longer ignore the existence of crimes. So, the bill, what does it do? It really declares the end of the termination era of thinking as the official state policy. Our presenters will go into more depth into the differences, the different time periods of federal Indian policy, but we put in the sponsor statement that the federal last year came into statement really right in the middle of the federal government's termination era of policy, where it was the stated and the official policy of Congress to end the police relationship that the nation had established with its Indian peoples. And so, our entire state policy at the beginning of it starts with termination era thinking, and we see that reflected in the Constitution itself and certainly throughout the statutes in the ways that the state government has acknowledged but not acknowledged tribal people, the tribes, and Representative Cobb mentioned one of the great ironies that the tribes have in dealing with the state is that at the one hand, the state denies the existence of tribes, but on the other hand, will not issue a grant without requiring you to waive sovereign immunity. When you don't exist, and you don't exist as a sovereign, why does the state require a waiving of sovereign immunity before they'll issue a grant? So, our hope is that that kind of thinking will come to an end. The four corners of the bill really don't take up the language of the bill does not take a step towards self-determination, but it really happens by virtue of the fact that we're stepping out of termination era. What self-determination might look like on the state level is really a longer and deeper conversation than what's presented in this bill. But it's our view that you really can't start that conversation until we formally acknowledge the tribes are here. The tribes are in the room with us, that they have a proper place in this room. So, with that, really just part of the provision of the bill is in section 4 and page 2. Really, there are just three sentences in there, but Representative Cobb said we backed a little into three sentences. The first sentence, first and foremost, recognizes that this is a federal question. The language itself of the first sentence uses the word special and unique. And these are words that the U.S. Supreme Court and the President Nixon and in his special address use these words to describe the relationship that the federal government has with tribes. The intent of putting it in the bill is to really communicate to tribes, communicate to the courts, that the legislature understands this relationship and understands the uniqueness and the specialness of this relationship. The second sentence is really the main operative provision of the bill, and it really just incorporates the federally recognized Tribal Police Act, and the citation to the U.S. Code is where that act resides in the U.S. Code. Also, what this bill does not do is not creating a state. Only recognition process is just acknowledging and deferring to the federal government for the recognition of tribe status. Finally, the third sentence, if you will, is the metaphorical tip of the bill. It's important to acknowledge and signal to the tribes and the courts as well that the States not touching the federal trust relationship between the federal government and the tribes, not even with the tech proposal. Also, for potential critics of the bill, the tribes are saying that the intent here is not to create a state trust relationship with tribes. It's also just another way of saying that we're not seeking to intrude into the relationship, the trust relationship, or diminish that relationship in any way, or to give the federal government a justification for considering diminishing that relationship with the tribes. That's pretty much the bill, Madam Chair. We're invited testimony three people. John Anderson, the draft village council president, the general counsel, Adoption Statement Technologies Conference, General Counsel, and then we'll be doing a presentation, and then Holly Handler with the National Legal Services Corporation will also discuss state tribal litigation. She's with the National Legal Services Corporation, and I've really been extensively on state tribal issues.
With that, are there any questions on the duty?
Thank you.
Thank you. Proclamation of Georgia, 1831, and was signed in Georgia, 1832. They set out these principles of federal Indian law. Aboriginal land rights. Aboriginal people retain the rights of these without negotiating. Only the United States government can settle Aboriginal land claims, and the U.S. has a legal duty to protect Aboriginal title until land claims are officially settled. Tribal authority. Tribes are nations with the authority to govern themselves. The source of their authority to govern is in the earth, meaning that it comes from tribes being self-governing long before explorers and settlers came to the Americas. Federal trust responsibility. The federal government has the responsibility to protect Indian lands and resources and to provide essential services to Indian people. This comes from the fact that the federal government took away the vast majority of Indian lands and in return promised to provide these things. Next slide. In 1867, Russia sold its claims to Alaska to the United States with the Treaty of Session, also known as the Alaska Purchase. The treaty included the West Bones Brand, one of many examples of how colonialism was treated indigenous peoples as inferior. The premise of this part of the treaty was that Native peoples were uncivilized, so the colonial government had the power to provide them with laws. So Russia considered itself the sovereign power of the Alaska Natives and Alaska Native tribes to the United States. In this way, tribes in Alaska were under the United States authority. However, what's key for our discussion today is the fact that from the very beginning of Alaska entering statehood, there was the awareness that tribes existed in Alaska. Thank you. This is Natasha again. So, the basis of federal Indian law is really in the Constitution. We actually cited it a few times. It has been cited a few times. Congress, the Constitution states, Congress shall have the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and within the tribes. Example of the United States recognition of the government-to-government relationship has been strongly recognized here. In land with the self-determination area that we're now in, it's called tribal consultation. Consultation and coordination with that the U.S. recognizes Indian tribes as domestic discrimination under its protection by language from the Marshall Trilogy. Next slide. It also recognizes the trust relationship with Indian tribes and recognizes the right of Indian tribes to self-government, tribal authority, and self-determination. All federal agencies are to respect Indian tribal self-government and authority. Thank you.
include her testimony at the presentation by the panel, sponsor and staff was very eloquent and very moving. In fact, I had put this together, I had a chance to speak with the bill sponsor, but I had an idea that made sure it crossed over that line of, having perfect and having the good. But as I hear the discussion today, I think about all the years that Alaska tribes have not been properly recognized even here in the legislature. Perhaps I should pose this question to the bill sponsor and staff. If it goes on why, but it seems like the bill is lacking something. And it's something that seems to be lacking in my view. It's some kind of preamble that talks about, hearing we just heard about this, transition that's taking place from one era to the next. Yet the fact that, over time, I've heard in this building repeatedly that tribes are really not the next in Alaska because they're not in the Alaska Constitution. They're referenced in the federal Constitution. So the journey that's taken place and the progress that's being made here, particularly the last couple of years, has been almost rapid fire. And I think this legislation is largely a legislation. This is not a rare bill. In fact, I'm so much concerned that we don't have a panel of gal here in the building or in the room actually for documenting this for posterity's sake. I think this is that significant of a bill. But through the chair, if I might invite a little bit of discussion about that. And again, I don't want to skip on the toes of this much. I'd rather get up and speak with him or his staff. And the bill, as I stated now, I think is very clear cut in terms of its intent. But the fact that this is making a dramatic sort of shift in states, policy or is putting in a statute, a pretty significant change in thinking, might it be appropriate to have that kind of a preamble in place that sort of gives a little bit more of an actual basis for why we're doing this? And, give this bill its proper due and state law.
Thank you, Speaker Ridgeway. Thought that it's so important to step over the threshold. And so the bill is very narrowly structured to not open anybody in the eye and to state the obvious and inside the fence in recognition of tribes or under Section 4 or just simply the state recognizes all tribes in the state that are federally recognized at 25 U.S.C. 5130 and 5131. And then we could make it more clear that that's our goal, as you know, is to recognize them as self-governing entities, as citizens, tribal citizens, more than members, but as citizens. And, more of a legislative intent section, which we could do, and we're certainly going to build a legislative record by talking about these things. But if you have some, very minimal to, craft a legislative intent section or something, but we were trying to keep the bill as concise as possible, to strictly address the policy, not denying that tribes exist in Alaska. That would be basically open the door, step through the threshold, and we get a new era of formal collaborating with tribes on every issue that Alaska desperately needs help with. We cannot do it alone, and we'll never be able to do it unless we work interdependently with each other. So,
yes, I'm off to the chair, Speaker Ridgeway. I think that that's a terrific idea. We would have to, I think, as we say, have speech with like the legal in terms of how they would qualify that kind of preamble. gamble. We had to undergo this draft of this bill. Section 4 was really only the second sentence, and they sent over the first three sentences for this particular section of the bill. And the first sentence and the third sentence were removed in their draft because it signified in both legal mind and something more of a legislative intent. And we pushed back and insisted that both those sentences be in the bill, primarily for the reasons that you're speaking about wanting to have a preamble, and specifically for the importance of the legal doctrine of the trust responsibility that the federal government owes to or has taken upon itself for the right. We thought that the bill would be stronger if that concept were in the statutes as a matter of law. So the tribe would have to prove it in court using legislative intent or legislative history. So that was, I think we would have loved to have that kind of preamble and something that mirrors on the state level. President Nixon's special address, I'm just not sure with legal that they would allow it into the bill.
Proceedings because part of the intent of this bill is for the state of Alaska to recognize the tribes, but I think that we need to include the people of Alaska in this journey so that there is an all-encompassing recognition and having the conversation of what this means, because we won't be doing it justice if it's only this building, and I would like to have further conversations so that we can hash out the deeper understanding, because from my Native perspective, it is difficult for us to understand the fullness of the intergovernmental relationships with the tribes, because it's challenging that we see why can't we just be all Alaskan. In our mind, we think that by asking for recognition of the tribes, it elevates the tribes over all of the other Alaskans. And we know that that's not true. That's not what's being asked. But I think that's the perception in a lot of non-Native minds. And I would like to be able to have that conversation and talk about those uncomfortable things. And if we do that in this venue, and welcome Alaskans along in this journey, I think it's going to create a change in the culture shift and how we represent or how we create understanding as Alaskans in this process of the self-determination. And I don't want to have this be something that people read in the news and have a lot of questions because of the assumptions that are being made. And look forward to further conversation and hopefully
bringing to them for all Alaskans
and not just
the
Native people who have been
waiting for this for a long time. I'm prepared to hear this one. Yeah. So that's what I think is good. Good point. You know, I think that we have laid a good foundation this whole past year talking about the U.S. Constitution, the history of not only the American Indian, but the Alaskan Native people, and yet being the tribes will be recognized in the Constitution, but not necessarily in our state constitution. And the reasons why is we were in a period of termination of recognizing tribes, of course, the state government was still not really caught where the federal government was going, and the federal government had officially changed positions under the Nixon administration in 1970. I think that
policy means is always being determined in the courtroom and down to open ultimately that child custody issues, welfare issues, adoption issues, law rule, misdemeanor, criminal law issues are now recognized by our courts as being consolidated within child self-determination, self-parenting. There's a lot of case law on that. And attorney generally was just, it was just on a very factual level, just what the law is, and that's all. And that the scope of self-determination and all these things continues to be refined and evolved. And what I was excited about personally is the bill is really designed to step out of the shadow of you and I talking about the tribe right there, and I'm looking at the tribe right there, and talking with the tribe. And I think once we do that, we will see, the whole scope of self-determination increased. That failure to do that earlier has caused, I have to really contribute to a lot of the societal breakdown that we've seen with our depression, our intergenerational trauma, which leads to suicide, substance abuse, all kinds of things. But I think when we get past the trial and honor these tribal citizens for who they are, and that they are absolutely incapable of moving forward as a state and any sense of wholeness, but let's not do this. That's really what this is about. And there's still a lot to learn. It's been another referral, and we can work on more language. I do know that it's quite a battle. Let's see how many of those would be out here. And I imagine we can wrangle with them for weeks or trying to, do changes. So that's what I'm going to ask them to do. I really appreciate the speaker's comments. Maybe we can have read something into the record that's a little preamble if it's a problem for the tribe. So this is my final thing. There are university courses on the subject. There are books. There are a lot of textbooks in the state of Alaska that could do a week long course on this. But I kind of distilled down to about 10 minutes of sitting for you to tours. The main point I'd like to convey today is that since the Alaska Purchase in 1867, tribal recognition of state recognition of tribes in Alaska has been warm. So for more than 150 years, what this bill proposes to do has been the accepted truth in Alaska, that Alaska sovereign tribes exist here and have existed for 10,000 years. It's only been a recent development in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s that there has been this battle over recognizing Alaska tribes.
sources, fighting against this reality and this truth, and this personal investment. And it's also been extremely painful to the people who live here. Going to conferences and meetings on trying to Alaska, you can hear people speak up and say, the state of Alaska doesn't even want you guys to exist. And so that's been a very painful history for people in America for decades. So, not to repeat what my colleagues, Natasha Stanley, Guy Anderson, have discussed with you, but this this litigation is based, it goes back to the previous session in 1867. This is the Alaska Purchase. I want to put purchase in quotation marks because, of course, the 50,000 indigenous residents in Alaska did not agree to this purchase in 1867. They were thinking of their lives beyond the stolen property. But in the 1867 treaty, that treaty referred to Alaska Native tribes as tribal governments, as sovereign Native governments. It was uncontroversial back in 1867. Our Alaska tribes existed in this state, in this place. That treaty referred to tribes as having equivalent status to tribes in the Lower 48. And as Natasha and I explained, both herself, family, political groups, international groups, political groups have been hearing solid that you just like their own affairs. So that was even something controversial in 1867. And in 1867, it was recognized that tribal sovereignty wasn't something for the federal government or a state government to bestow, that indigenous tribes have these authorities and have had that for decades and years. So, what this creates is a dual citizenship. So, just like all of us are citizens of the United States, of the state of Alaska, and that dual citizenship is uncontroversial. There are citizens of other countries in Alaska. Although, as a caveat, the United States didn't recognize our indigenous people as citizens until 1924. And in Alaska, under our 1915 Native Citizenship Act, our people and a lot of indigenous people had to apply for Alaska citizenship, and they could only obtain a certificate of citizenship if they got certification from at least 5 white citizens that they had preferred all tribal customs and relationships. So that was the legacy that we are still dealing with today. And when I talk about the status of the tribes as non-controversial for most of our history, that's not to be paperwork that raises institutional discrimination that has happened over the past 150 years. It is just this legal status that has been controversial. So since the 1867 Treaty of Session, the assumption has been in federal legislation applied to Alaska that tribes exist in concept of authority, and that can be seen in the 1900s, where we have lost enacting federal reserves for Alaska Native tribes. We've had allotments and town sites that have been reserved for tribal citizens in the state of Alaska. In the 1930s, the federal government recognized that tribal governments could enact their own laws of marriage. But again, this isn't to say that tribal laws depended on federal recognition, but the feds did recognize the authority of tribal governments back then to enact their own practices and laws recognizing marriage. In the 1990s, we also had the Indian Reorganization Act, which again applied to Alaska and specifically recognized the existence of Alaska tribes here. And Public Law 280, which sometimes has been referred to by anti-tribal advocates as extinguishing tribal sovereignty in Alaska, actually did not exist without the recognition of Native tribes here, because it extended state jurisdiction over Indian country. Of Alaska. But of course, you can't have an Indian country without sovereign Indian tribes. In the 1970s, there was a series of federal legislation, including the Indian Trail Over Act, that specifically recognized the existence of authority in Alaska. And ICSA, in 1971, specifically recognized tribes in Alaska. And then, individual advocates tried to seize corporations are, of course, just in government. And so the way individual corporations can get their website up, we're pretty sure outside tribal governments. So the people that citizens of a corporation, the shareholders, and corporations were chartered to create economic development and profit and defense, or tribal governments and things to benefit people, or mental stresses, law enforcement, public safety, and things like that. Background for where tribal litigation really took off in the 1980s in the state of Alaska, when anti-tribal advocates tried to twist the passage of ANCSA and twist the purpose of Public Law 280 to say that tribes were extinguished within the state. And so from 1986 to 1982, you can see on the timeline, is really an aberration. So we have, between 1986 and 1992, several lawsuits, including Nayana, which was about child protection, Seamus Village, which I'm not sure if we're team, which is about sovereign immunity, and FPTs, which is about training for exercising authority to protect abused and neglected tribal children. And in these cases, anti-tribal advocates, as the state court defined, the tribes lost with the passage of ANCSA in 1971. They argued that without land, tribes couldn't vote for their own citizens. And these cases, citing the anti-tribal advocates, held sway until the 1990s. And in the 1990s, I was showing in the question discussed in the Congressional Reaffirmation of Tribes by the Department of Interior with a list of recognized tribes all over the country, and the Congressional List Act to codify and use code that the Department of Interior recognized. And so the founding paper was litigated to the Alaska Supreme Court in 1999. Not only did the tribal advocates and tribes have these recent acts, but they had the 100 years of history to see that the anti-tribal advocates were off base and trying to create new law in Alaska that tribes were now extinguished by ANCSA. And of course, this tragedy takes a full in Brown versus Baker. And even in 1989, the state of Alaska, the U.S. Department of Justice, sided with the tribes, saying that tribal jurisdiction exists in Alaska because tribes are sovereign entities in Alaska. And so it seemed in 1999 that the brief revolution was ending and we're moving on finally to move forward. We had the Millennium Agreement in 2000. The Office of Children's Services, based on John P. Baker, included an entire set of policies and procedures about working cooperatively with tribes in the state of Alaska to protect Native and non-Native children alike. And we seem to be on the road of progress. That ended in 2004. And that started the second operation in the state. I would say that my views and that opinion abruptly turned back, abruptly took an aggressively anti-tribal stance, and tore up all the work that this state had done in the prior 5 years. And without referring to all the hundreds of years of history, it just declared that tribal sovereignty did not exist in the state of Alaska. And so it began a second wave of litigation in which the Department of Law, with the help of very expensive outside counsel, litigated a series of cases. So that was the Canada case, which discussed tribal jurisdiction over child protection cases, the Caltech cases, which discussed tribal jurisdiction over adoptions, the Casper case, for example, Nevada, and Sandy Parks, which is another tribal protection case. So, in these 4 cases, which all took close to a decade to litigate, and we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of man and woman hours of the Department of Law, tens of thousands of dollars for outside counsel, because in some of these cases, not how it turned out. I went very poorly with it because all of these cases failed. The Department of Law, with all its outside legal power, failed. All these four cases were decided in favor of the tribes because history and research and truth were on your side. The Supreme Court and the federal courts all agree that nothing is like extinguished sovereignty of tribes to exist and allow this government to continue to exercise jurisdiction over their own people. And so not only were these cases expensive and painful, but we have a huge opportunity cost. For these decades, the state of Alaska will also have opportunities to partner with tribes on projects. They lost the opportunity to partner with the tribes on grant opportunities and farming programs. And it's only now, since 2016, when the state stopped actively litigating against the tribes in these cases, that we see the lesson of opportunity. And so that's taken place in a number of areas, from transportation and road building to child protection. State of Alaska signed an historic agreement several years ago to jointly support children and child foster care. Because it's the burden of the state to empower the tribe to support their foster families. We've seen that in law enforcement with the DPS program, in healthcare, with the behavioral service clinics that are serving all people in the low, small, and village communities in Alaska. We've seen that in economic development. So, from a legal perspective, what this bill does is nothing really revolutionary in terms of law. It recognizes what the scholars have known to be true for 150 years. But it's revolutionary in terms of solidifying the state's commitment to work with tribes and to solidify a state that will revert back to these periods of very expensive and litigation against the state's own people. So I appreciate the sponsorship of the bill, and I appreciate your time today. And I can answer any questions.
Before we turn to questions from the panel, I understand that Ms. Lang had a couple of wrap up comments. I'm sorry, are you still on the line?
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you.
does it give anything to other people in the think of Mr. Pruitt's divorce and the Luskin attorney? In fact, William Paul, who was approached by Luskin at a trend of 1912, was from Juneau, or here in Southeast, using evidence of his efforts through writing number 2, 3, and 4 that were making under Federal Reserve loans, constantly to the organization act and so forth. Journey to where hopefully we're going to get to here at some point. Complete the loop. And as we say, Mrs. Talking a moment ago, be able to be in a position where their services, state government, it's hanging in with the money that we had when we were at peak revenue periods. We just couldn't, achieve. We just didn't have the money to do it. So I've been kind of speaking longer than I need to, but I would, just again underscore that this bill is very significant and more than just mere statutory change.
Additional questions? Thank you, Governor. We will now open the bill for public testimony. We will begin with testimony in the room. Please let your attention if you want to open the door to us on the recording to take your testimony.
Madam Chair, committee members, because I believe this is not an issue, I'm probably not allowed to use my files, because probably how I go through it is on myself. For the purpose of this, I'm going to introduce myself to Judy Peterson, President of Clinton Center. I'm honored to be here and to be able to share words of support for House Bill 221. As the chair, I would like to thank Representative Cobb and his staff here at Truett. This is emotional to say the least. And I've heard questions, I've heard comments already this morning that talk to the efforts and relevant to what's happening. As a lifelong Alaskan, I consider myself an Alaskan as everybody else. But first and foremost, I identify myself to my client, Paul Montalant. And that's something for us when we talk about our place here in Alaska. I can trace that lineage for 10,000 plus years. And I think that's deserving of some special recognition. Not in Alaska, it doesn't put me in an apartment or in a different spot. Moved here, but it recognizes that I do have a different history. And that history is traced that I live in a village and come from a village that my forefathers have come from. That not to be romanticizing it, but there are times I've literally walked into the beaches and what we don't just be in the sand and the gravel and thought, my ancestors were in the same exact place as I am, except for the same rivers that I exist. They hunted the same woods that I hunted. It's a pretty remarkable thing to be able to acknowledge.
And I think that's a lot of confusion when we talk about the resources and why some of the people say wins. I think it's the most community in our history that led to that richness. And really, in fact, also, I learned last week that it should be. So, I just felt I needed to say that after hearing some of the things that I heard. I also, I'll give a brief rundown, but I have some other comments. Again, Representative Zulkowski, thank you so much for this committee, the work that you're doing, Speaker Richmond, for forcing me to have this committee. And I think if I weren't, they were still talking about needing recognition. And as I heard it was there, I wanted to say to myself, being a former mayor and other communities to say I'm tribal president there, the tribe was part of the backbone of our community. We were able to bring funds in that support our whole community because of our special standing and federally recognized tribe. And it always gave pause when I had them sign a waiver of sovereign immunity to the state of Alaska, recognize ourselves with our tribes. It was in their life to have to waive something that they don't even acknowledge. So I think that in itself is something I'd like to see go away through this process. So on behalf of the committee, I want to officially say that we are in support of House Bill 221 and have provided for state recognition of federally recognized tribes. As many of you know, Clinton Fighters have been described in Alaska with over 31,000 enrolled tribal citizens across the state of Alaska, the nation, and the world. We are the referred to as the federal recognition list of 1994, and it's put out every year. Clinton Fighters was actually omitted from that list, and through Act of Congress, we were put back on that list, and we kind of have a unique status. We were established through an Act of Congress, and we were being recognized through an Act of Congress. We've made a lot of lawyers very well through organizations. Clinton Fighters is unique in that it's a regional tribe recognized by an Act of Congress, and so as we heard from Troy in the council, represent regional tribal nonprofits. So they're not actual tribes, but they're authorized through residency for tribes to represent them. We also recognize or represent some of our village tribes through Compact, but we ourselves are a federally recognized tribe. So that's kind of a distinction. If anybody needs further education on what they do with regional tribes, I'm not happy. It's a very long story I'm going to do with lots of lawyers. So. Alaska is home to 229 federally recognized tribes. As you heard, in the nation, I think there's 573. The fact that in our great state, we make up about half of the tribes in the whole nation, I think also lends itself to the fact that recognition is long overdue. Because we are a federally recognized tribe, this is a formal trust relationship between the federal government and our tribal government. It has been repeatedly upheld in the United Supreme Court, courts across the nation. And so I think that's really, again, important to note that time and again, whenever our sovereignty and our recognition is questioned, we win. Court because it's a matter of law. And I think the state of Alaska has it itself lost some of those cases. So I think that as a matter of policy, it's just a good to have this recognition. House Bill 221 would show that the state finally recognizes our inheritance or to serve our citizens. Alaska tribes have been active partners with the state to engage many issues in our communities from public safety, DNF, Head Start, and on and on. Formal recognition of our inherent sovereignty would further strengthen the relationship and partnerships between tribes and the state. I think, through the chair,
Speaker, Adriana, I really, really appreciate your comments and wanted to really deepen this and add the significance of it. I would caution, however, and again to the chair, Representative Grant's really some good points. I really think it would be the death of this bill if I expanded it now. I think that simplicity is the beauty of it. We need to normalize these conversations. We need to normalize the recognition of tribes to people who don't fully understand it. And I think that through Representative Cobb's work here in this effort, just getting that recognition will be that start of those kind of conversations of normalizing the idea that there are recognized tribes in Alaska. And so I'm a tribal leader, I don't speak tribal tribes, obviously. But it is my opinion that I think we should increase this bill through as it is. I would caution against expanding it. And I know that might sound contrary to my own beliefs. But I feel like it's most important that this bill through now. So I just feel like I'm getting cheated by sentencing publicly on the record. If you hear me speak, you often hear me talk about the impact of tribes to Alaska. I think it's really important to point out through our healthcare system, through tribal compacts, with the BIA, that tribes bring in hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in the state of Alaska. And I've heard people even comment and say, well, we don't want that responsibility, that not the trust responsibility. I can tell you if we didn't have that, it would be your responsibility because we are Alaskans. And so we save Alaska, especially in this time of budget constraints, we save the state of Alaska hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars through healthcare, through Head Start, through all these different funding that we bring to Alaska. And then I'll study healthy tribes and make healthy communities. Barnard, that's the truth. And when we talk about historic trauma and things, I'll tell you, I grew up in a very small village, raised with the idea that when people on green food spending their money, they're the enemy. And I'll tell you why. People on green suits were the newest war stories. And through the 30s and up until the 50s, they systematically went through our region and burnt down our homes, burnt down our fish camps, and it was through official working and doing and working together that we began to address that. And until you address those things, healing never happens. I didn't realize I carried trauma because as a young boy, I heard my great uncle talk about these folks coming in and burning his cabin. They were the enemy. And in this day, I work very closely with the Forest Service. We have complex relationships. And it wouldn't happen if we were able to address some of the trauma. And the fact that the state of Alaska does not recognize tribes. As the homeowner spoke at the local conferences, it's a point of trauma and contention to this day. That while we're asked to step up and be a partner, we're asked to waive our sovereignty, we can't get civil recognition. So I think this bill would really be a powerful way to begin that feeling. It does not give us any special standing over any other Alaska, but it recognizes a special place in Alaska. You heard earlier from the council, and I believe that our Alaska history book has not even a full chapter dedicated to Alaska Natives. History didn't start from Alaska 60 years ago. We have a rich history that goes back thousands and thousands of years. Our culture is complex. We have, in this area, we are very busy in rural economic development. In fact, people ask me, why do you think there's a critical volume? And I simply say, well, because we created commerce. People look at me. We have complex systems built on trade and barter. We protected rivers and trails based on that commerce. telecommutes traveled mostly in ad hoc meetings with complex tools well before contact thousands of years. And you can find proof. So we have things here from Chinese coins dating back well before contact. We have a history of the coins because we traveled there. We have complex history that needs to be recognized. I want to say again that recognition would be this powerful symbol for us to move forward. I can't emphasize that enough. And for myself personally, I don't know what you mean to me. Again, I'll repeat, recognition would not threaten anyone else, isn't the way it is, but it recognizes our special place, our uniqueness. I want to point out also, 6 years ago, when I became president of Copenhagen, one of the first things I did was formally sign a new lawyer with Governor Barnett. We have had complex relationships with the state of Alaska. Again, in everything we do, they recognize it, but won't see it. And I think someday we'll move her so much further ahead. We'll start removing some of the hurt on our side. And for those who don't understand, I can't think we're getting something special and putting us over them, and begin to normalize it for our citizens in the state of Alaska. I just want to thank again the Chair, Representative Pop, and thank you for really taking a step out and putting yourself out there. I'm sure for criticism, but I want to give you the credit to you for doing that. I think these are both courageous conversations to have. Last week, or 2 weeks ago, I testified before that committee on education, the education compact. We're starting to normalize these things, we're starting to have the conversations. But again, it seems very hollow without formal recognition. So I want to thank you for that courage. I want to thank you for working so close with Dan. I've had a long relationship with Dan, and I can see his handprints on this, and I'm very grateful for that. So I want to say that she's hollow. I want to say thank you all for your time.
Thank you again. Seeing no one else in the room that wishes to testify, we'll go to the alphabet, and Frederick Olson Jr. in Sitka, I see you online. Are you there? If you could begin by putting yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you.
questions from committee members? All right. Hearing no further listening to any testimony today. Seeing no additional individuals willing to testify, I will close public testimony. I will continue public testimony on House Bill 231 on guaranteed immunity for drug lawyers. We will also be holding the bill in committee at this time. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, February 18th at 8 a.m. here in Dublin, Room 106, where we will hear Bill's privacy covered and hear a presentation on the Alaska Tribal Tribal for conduct of invited testimony. The time is 9:42 a.m., and this hearing of the House of Lawyers Committee is now adjourned.